If you have your marriage license, weddings will be conducted at the Melody Ballroom until 10 p.m. tonight.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Voices on the Ground, Resistance and Resilience, Friday and Saturday, June 6th and 7th at Portland State University. The keynote speaker will be Sherry Hunkala, a national activist in anti-poverty movements and co-founder of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union and the Poor People's Economic Human Rights. This two-day conference will focus on areas of human rights, criminalization, and pathologizing of identities and experiences, revolutionary tools, and more. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Sun Ra. Hailed as one of the great big band leaders, pianists, and surrealists of jazz in the New York Times. Composer, keyboardist, band leader, philosopher, poet, and self-proclaimed extraterrestrial, Sun Ra arrived on the Earth 100 years ago on May 22, 1914. This Thursday, May 22, 2014, KBOO will dedicate the airwaves to 12 hours of the music, life, and philosophy of one of the 20th century's greatest avant-garde artists, Sun Ra. Beginning at 7 p.m., continuing all night long until 7 a.m. with a special in-studio performance of the Sonic Innovators Orchestra, featuring students of Thera Memories and conducted by David Ornette Cherry at 9 p.m. That's this Thursday, beginning at 7 p.m., a 12-hour tribute to the phenomenon known as Sun Ra, here on KBOO Portland.
How do you stop it?
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Creative Music Guild's third annual Improvisation Summit of Portland. This year's Improvisation Summit brings together creative and adventurous musicians, dancers, and improvisers for a weekend of diverse and unique performances. Featured artists include Tim Byrne, Bad Luck, Scott Kutchell, The Rich Halley Quartet, Ken Allison Senses Sharpened, Michael Sterling, Doug Terrio, Matt Carlson, John Gross, and many more. The third annual Improvisation Summit takes place June 6th and 7th at Sandbox Studios, located at 420 Northeast 9th in Portland. Additionally, the Creative Music Guild will screen the film Reach of Resonance on June 5th at the Portland Art Museum's Witzel Auditorium. For more information and tickets, go to creativemusicguild.org.
National Tap Dance Day is May 24th, and KBOO is proud to co-sponsor a celebration of tap dance. Tap workshops will be held from 12:15 to 5:15 at the Grand Finale Dance Studio at 875 Portland Avenue in Gladstone, Oregon. And at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, there will be performances including Yearly Sunset, Shoehorn, Aaron Wheeler K, and Skylark Tappers. Again, that's May 24th at the Grand Finale Dance Studio and the Clinton Street Theater. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 14th Annual Village Building Convergence from Friday, May 23rd to Sunday, June 1st. The Village Building Convergence is a 10-day placemaking and urban permaculture festival that leaves a permanent, sustainable impact all across the city as an expression of what communities all across the city are ready to do in their own places. The VBC brings together a vast spectrum of related initiatives, such as community currency, grassroots democracy, ecological design, youth engagement, social justice in action, ecological stewardship, multimodal transportation, and so much more. This year's evening speakers and performers will be at the Sunnyside Methodist Church, 3520 Southeast Yamhill Street in Portland. A list of speakers and more information about the Village Building Convergence in general can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6:04, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM Community Radio. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Redirect Guide, committing to promoting progressive regional businesses based upon the values of sustainability, localism, and social justice. Complete business directory and resource guide at redirect.com.
Doesn't change much, does it? By the way, I would appreciate it if you wouldn't use those flash cameras, because they scare me, and I mean that. But they remind me, see, I was a soldier over in Korea, and I was flash on muzzle flashes. You know, what I mean is that I know they're flash cameras, but all my alarms go off, and I don't have any control over that. Same with loud noises, you know, that just frighten me, which is why these little compressed air door closures on all the doors in my house, because it sounds like gunshots. So please don't do that, all right? Well, where was I? Oh, I was talking about free speech and the labor movement. I think that what I'll do is I'll just tell you some of those stories of those elders and let them speak for themselves. And they always did speak for themselves vociferously and eloquently. They were in command of language. Most of my great teachers, they couldn't read or write. You know, like Jack Miller out in Seattle, Washington, who was on the Verona during the free speech fight up in Everett in 1916. They were passionate people who lived in their emotions and were comfortable there and made commitments to struggle in their emotional lives that carried them through 50, 60 years. And Frank Miller said, you know, you show me people who make the same commitments intellectually, and I don't know where they'll be next week. That's pretty hard to take, isn't it? Well, he was harder than that. He said, when armed only with our sense of degradation as human beings, we couldn't read, we couldn't write, we spoke 14 different languages. Armed only with that sense of degradation, we came together and organized and changed the condition of our lives. And then he said, you young people today, with all you've got, why can't you do the same thing? That's worth a ponder, isn't it? Huh? It's worth a ponder. Once you answer the question, why you don't do that, well, you've learned a whole lot. Oh, learning a whole lot, well, there was old A.L., Art Nurse, up there in Missoula, Montana. Now, Art was another Wobbly organizer. Worked on the docks in Houston. 20 years on the open sea, merchant marine, and then 21 years longshore. Worked hard all of his life, always carried his union card. Finally retired, righteously old, up there to Missoula, up to Thompson Falls, Montana, a little cabin owned by his kin. In his mid-80s, Art Nurse came down to Spokane, and he opened an office of his union, the IWW, with a membership of 40, and a, by God, 800 number. An IWW office with an 800 number? Unheard of. He became a great teacher. I'd go over there, I'd boom over on the Billy Goat, the Burlington Northern freight trains, and on the low line. We would walk those tracks together, the old NP tracks. Well, he'd use those as a commuter freight when he was working in the mines over in Butte and in the timber harvest. Now, all that's been bought up by Denny Washington, a millionaire construction operator in Montana, and he's running as a non-union road. And Art Nurse would walk along there looking down and say, look at that, there's spikes here 4 inches above the ties. Why, this is an unsafe railroad because it's being run non-union. It's all cheap labor. He said that the welfare department in that county was suing Denny Washington to make up the welfare payments that they had to give the tramps who were afraid to ride his trains out of town. Art Nurse was a sage and a true Wobbly. I mean, you know what I mean? Industrial Workers of the World, IWW Wobblies. He was a true Wobbly. Now, if you've ever wondered what a true Wobbly is, I'll tell you. Once and for all, it was during an election. Art Nurse is coming down out of the Moose Lodge where he got his morning drink, take the corner against the wind on his heel. One of Missoula's morning drunks, they got morning drunks in Missoula. One of the morning drunks reeled out of Charlie's bar, cross Higgins Avenue, up to Old Art Nurse, put a loaded revolver to his head, said, "You're going to vote Republican or Democrat?" Art Nurse said, "Shoot me." That's a wobbly. No, I don't know. I'll tell you, I'll sing you Art Nurse's favorite song. Again, it's one of those things where Art said, "You sing that song wherever you go." I said, "Art, sometimes you get in serious trouble singing that song." He said, "It doesn't matter. It's good trouble." One of the things that goes with free speech, isn't it? Is buying good trouble.
And we were just listening to Utah Phillips from his Making Speech Free disc, and that was titled Armed with Our Only Sense of Degradation. So coming up next, we have a special program on the current fast food strike, originally aired on KABU May 15th.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. Right now, it is with great pleasure and reverence, I get to introduce somebody who I've had the pleasure of working with for a number of years, Sean Waterman, who is writing for Politico, the cyber security section of the paper or the periodical. Sean, welcome back to the Union Edge.
Hey, great to be on.
Always a pleasure, Sean. Always a pleasure. Listen, data mining our kids in school and in other places. First of all, what is data mining and why should we be upset?
Okay, so data mining relies on the fact that when we go online, when we use a computer, we leave a trail of digital data. The computer knows which websites we visited, it knows how long we stayed there, it knows where we, you know, which pages we visited. When kids do online testing, the computer sees how long it takes them to answer a particular question, and because these children nowadays, as most of your listeners will know, are tested repeatedly throughout the school year, and a lot of this testing is online. The companies, the for-profit companies that own and operate these testing systems, can look at a huge amount of data over time. They can tell, does your kid like have a problem concentrating before lunch? Because you can tell, do they hesitate longer over particular answers? At particular times of day. So, and you know, it's education, right? A lot of this data is gathered with real good intentions that, you know, you can spot problems early and you can intervene, but it's also kind of creepy, isn't it?
It is. And you know, Sean, this concerns me as a parent. I've got a 14-year-old who is taking some online computer programming courses through his school. And it did not occur to me that this type of information might be being collected, not only by the vendor, but my next question is where the heck are they going to send this information to, and what are the ramifications of this? I mean, you know, it's one thing for us being online and you know, going to Google and watching YouTube and all this other kind of stuff, but this is real serious. And how do we protect our children?
Well, before we get on to that, let me just talk about the actual, the really scary end of this, because you said, what do they do with all this information? Well, the answer is that they sell it, and they sell it to each other, they sell it to other educational companies. In the broader picture, when you're talking about all the data points that we as adults create, and it's not just on the web, you know, every time we use a credit card, every time our car passes an automated license plate recognition camera, of which there are now millions all across the United States, again, all in private hands, right? These data points are created, and the big aggregators, the credit unions and other companies that make their money by crunching through all this data, can really build up incredible detailed personal portraits of our behavior, and which they use to try and sell us goods and services.
This is just absolutely incredible. You know, my question is, how do we, number one, right now, protect our kids, okay? Make sure that this information is not sold. And number two, you know, we extrapolate this out to ourselves.
Well, okay, so I'd advise your listeners that are interested in this to go online and look at Stephanie's story on Politico.com today. And there are a couple of sidebars where they look at some of the questions about... I mean, the problem is that the legal framework often differs from state to state. And, you know, the federal law is often unclear. So, and you know, that's not because it's that bad. It's just that it's a very complicated issue. You know, you want, for example, schools to be able to share information about a particular pupil, right? If they move from one school to another, you don't necessarily want the staff at that new institution to have to start from square one. But, you know, so it's a very complicated issue, and there are lots of overlapping and conflicting laws. And so, I mean, in general terms online, Chuck, I mean, oh, boy, I don't know. You know, I've got a 10-year-old, and it's something I think we all wrestle with. You have to teach them a degree, I think, of discretion, right? It's in public. It's all in public. What do they do in public? How do they behave in public? Because that's how they ought to behave online. Right.
Right.
And, you know, you may think you're IMing with your mate, but, I mean, he could be saving logs of those chats, you know? So it's a matter of trust, just like it is, like it would be with someone... You know, the problem is that in the online environment, you know, you can build a false sense of intimacy and false trust, perhaps a lot easier than you can in real life. So, you know, I mean, it's a difficult one. Now, as for you and me, I mean, we are basically screwed, mate, if you'll forgive me if I'm allowed to say that on the radio. But, you know, there was a wonderful piece... I believe it was published in one of the on the website, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, by a young lady, a privacy researcher, who tried to hide from the internet the fact that she was pregnant, right? Because, you know, this is what this stuff is all about at the end of the day. They find out you're pregnant, and then they target you with advertisements, you know, for maternity clothing, and then later for baby items, diapers and so forth, right?
Right.
And, you know, so she made a point of trying not to reveal to the internet that she was pregnant. And, I mean, it's a very interesting read because it was very, very difficult for her.
I can imagine. Listen, Sean, we're coming to the end of this. The cybersecurity is a brand new piece for Politico.
It is indeed, yes, sir.
This is exciting.
We launched yesterday.
And, Sean, how do we find out more about this?
You can go to politico.com, and it should be right there on the front page. There's a little box. You can put your email address in there and sign up for our morning newsletter, Morning Cybersecurity, or you can go to politico.com/morningcybersecurity and sign up there.
There we go. Sean, we're going to get you on a more regular basis because I think this is a very important thing everybody needs to be aware of. We have to look out for ourselves, our organizations, our family, and I'm glad to know that you're doing this, and we appreciate it very much.
Oh, my pleasure, mate.
And we'll talk to you soon. Sean Waterman for Politico Cybersecurity. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
Members of the American Postal Workers Union handle more than 165 billion letters and packages a year. That's about 34 million pounds of mail every day. Ever wonder what this costs you as a taxpayer? Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions? Not a single cent. The United States Postal Service doesn't run on your tax dollars. It's funded solely by stamps and postage. Brought to you by the men and women of the American Postal Workers Union.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. As many of you know, there is a large number of fast food workers all over the United States, all over the world. We're taking a day, taking time. They're out. They're rallying. They want fair pay, fair day's work. And right now, we're talking with Ashana Osborne, who is a fast food worker. Ashana, welcome to Union Edge.
Thank you so much. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on the hashtag. What's going on?
Go ahead.
I'm just going to let you know that we are out here right now at Wendy's, and we're on Penn Avenue. We've been out since 6 o'clock this morning. We are striking to raise minimum wage. We have families who are living off of strong poverty and who are wanting more. I have a four-year-old myself, and I have to, you know, live off of paycheck to paycheck. I have to budget 2 checks out of my check just to get my son some shoes, plus struggle to get my way to work for the next week. My CEO at McDonald's, he makes $6,600 an hour, and I only get $7.25, and I bust my behind. I do 40 hours of work. I go to work. I do what I got to do, and I still have to struggle to make meet. I'm out here with everyone. We have everyone out here today. I'm so proud. I feel like such an activist. Like, this is something that my son's going to read in his history books when he gets older in high school. I'm so proud of what's going on with the community today. And we're just making a strong, strong impact. On the north side, when we strike at the Wendy's, they closed down. They shut down. They were scared of us. There was nothing they could do. They shut business down. They said no Wendy's today. Co-workers came out and striked with us. Subway workers came out. KFC workers came out. We got people honking for support. We're doing it. We're doing it real big.
Ashana, you are absolutely right. People all over the United States, people all over the world are supporting this effort. And, you know, you're working full time. You're working 40 hours a week. You're not making enough to take care of your son. And that's not right. That's inappropriate. And my goodness gracious, on top of it, the companies are telling you, well, you know, if you got a health care problem, go to the county, get assistance. If you got a food.
Yeah. Our business has a hotline called the MidHealth Line, and they told us to save food, eat smaller portions, to relieve stress, go talk to a therapist, and take a vacation. I'm like, how are they going to tell us to be, you know, eat smaller portions just to save food whenever we work at a fast food restaurant, and if we eat, it's called considered a fast. It's so ridiculous, and it's like the dollar cannot stretch how it used to stretch back in a couple years ago, and I'm only 22, and I can say that I know whenever back in the day when I was able to ride the bus on $1.50 and be able to get off throughout Pittsburgh. Now, you know, they're asking for $5, and it's like every time that we even get paid and go to the ATM, that's the money going right back into their pocket.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Now, listen, what is it you want the listeners, not only here in Pittsburgh, but all over the country, all over the world to do? What do you want them to do?
I want everyone that's listening, I want you all to please stand up and don't be scared. This is working for you. You know how we can fight the vote and everything, but that's not directly affecting us ourselves. I want you to stand up, go outside, do what you got to do, strike off right now, go off of work, go outside and join our strike. We are going to make it happen. 26 states already did it. That's half the nation. We need you guys' support. We need you guys' voices. So the stronger the public voice is, the more the impact is. So please, whatever you can do, just please support us. We need it.
Ashana, let me ask you a question. How high do you want the minimum wage to be taken to?
As high as it could possibly go.
Well, there you go.
That's $7.
There you go. That's an honest answer for nothing else. But, you know, there's a number of people out there saying $10.10 an hour. I'm not sure that that's high enough. I think it should go to $15 an hour.
Of course.
That's the same level that Henry Ford paid his assembly line workers back in 1914. You know, it's not huge money by any stretch of the imagination, but you know what? It allows people to go to work full time, not have to rely on the taxpayers and in county assistance for health care, for housing, and for food assistance. It allows you to stand up on your own. It allows you to take personal responsibility for yourself and your family.
Exactly. Yeah.
And now, you're saying that the people are driving by, people are walking by, they're supportive, they get it. What else are people saying to you?
People are even walking off the job. People don't walk off the job and join us. We don't went into certain restaurants. We walked off the. We went to certain restaurants, and people that were working just walked right off the job and came right with us.
There you go. What's the next steps?
The next step is just keep fighting. We're going to keep striking. It's raining right now, but we're still going in through the rain or what have you. We got to keep going. We're not going to stop until about, 2 o'clock p.m., and then we're going to keep going.
Well,
not until we win. We're not going to stop until we win. That's the answer. We're not going to stop until we win, and I want all America to hear this. We need your support, and we're not going to stop corporate, Congress, whoever. We're not going to stop until we win.
There you go. Any final words for the listening audience today?
I'm sorry?
Any last words for the listening audience today?
Just thank you so much for anyone who's coming and supporting us. Thank you so much, and please keep doing it. We need you, and we will win, and we are going to win.
There we go. Ashana Osborne, we appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. Thank you.
Good luck and God bless. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. Right now, we're talking with Mark Belanger of Radio Labor. We appreciate, Mark, you being with us today. Mark, this whole thing about fast food workers, not just here in the United States and in Canada, but all over the world, they're coming together on this one. I am sure that there are franchise owners and business owners all across the world that are saying, you know what, I think they're serious about this.
This is absolutely a question of global solidarity. There are a lot of brave people walking the picket lines in the United States today who should know that they're being supported by unionists around the world. Right now, as we're talking, there are demonstrations in support of the American fast food workers in 33 countries around the world. This is an amazing example of how working people respect each other and want to help each other.
Mark, just out of curiosity, do you think you could get one company here in the United States support from companies in 33 other countries in the world?
I think the support can be put in a negative way. I think there are people around the world who are reacting to companies like McDonald's and others who are saying, listen, the world has changed, that it's no longer a job for, you know, somebody out of school or a summer job. These are trying to be living wages. People are trying to raise families on this. And at the moment, we have demonstrations in support of the American workers in, you know, the countries that you would think of, Germany, France, the UK, Ireland, Belgium. But amazingly, there are demonstrations in Bangladesh, Pakistan, India, the Philippines, on and on. I think what's happening in those countries is that they know that if working people in the United States can't have a living wage, then they won't be able to buy the products of the workers in Bangladesh or Pakistan.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 14th Annual Village Building Convergence from Friday, May 23rd to Sunday, June 1st. The Village Building Convergence is a 10-day placemaking and urban permaculture festival that leaves a permanent, sustainable impact all across the city as an expression of what communities all across the city are ready to do in their own places. The VBC brings together a vast spectrum of related initiatives such as community currency, grassroots democracy, ecological design, youth engagement, social justice in action, ecological stewardship, multimodal transportation, and so much more. This year's evening speakers and performers will be at the Sunnyside Methodist Church, 3520 Southeast Yamhill Street in Portland. A list of speakers and more information about the Village Building Convergence in general can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, I'm Shahid Hamid, and I want to invite you to a very special 8-hour Memorial Day Soul and Rhythm and Blues experience right here on KBOO 90.7 FM from 12 o'clock noon to 8 p.m. with JJ leading us off from 12 noon to 2 o'clock, followed by Sequoia Wright from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock p.m., followed by yours truly, Shahid, from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m., and Reggae Bob taking us home from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m. From the old to the new, just for you, a very special Memorial Day Soul and Rhythm and Blues experience. Monday, May the 26th, 12 noon to 8 p.m., right here on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM, and online, www.kboo.fm radio.
The time is 6:30, Monday, May 19th, 2014. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next on KBOO, it's Prison Pipeline.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime, and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Tonight I am joined by Jessica Katz and Aaron Webb with the Family Preservation Project at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, Oregon's only women's prison. We're also joined by Eva Guzman, who recently released from Coffee Creek. So we'll talk about how the Family Preservation Project helps connect women